Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Did I hear anything?
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What a end zone punt. Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, live from the Giants facility here at East Rutherford, New Jersey. I'm Paul Dottino. We'll be here for the next hour to take your phone calls at 201-939-4513 or your Twitter questions and comments at hashtag Giants Chat. As you know, we're here Monday to Friday from noon to 1 Eastern Time to talk Giants football. Now, a couple of things I want to bring up right off the bat because, you know, I haven't been here for a week or so, and you know, a lot of people have been talking to me as I go through my town about free agency and about the draft. And, you know, everybody wants to know what are the Giants going to do with their roster. And I understand that, a lot of questions. But one of the things that I saw yesterday, and I want to bring this up because it's an important part of what the Giants have to do moving forward. Antrell Roll apparently was on Sirius NFL radio again the other day. I guess it was last night. And once again, expressed his desire to stay with the Giants. Now, here's the interesting part about this. Guys who talk a good game usually don't consistently do it. They'll talk a good game for a little while, and then it kind of fades away. Roll apparently is talking more and more and more as the days go on, about how much he really does want to be here. Now, I'm not saying he's not sincere, because I do believe Antrell Roll is sincere. But you often wonder, how sincere is a player, and how will that translate into the negotiations and the price that he ultimately asks for? Now, there have been many Giants over the years who wanted to stay. Justin Tuck, Ahmad Bradshaw, Brandon Jacobs, and then, you know, for whatever reason, injuries, age, decisions that involve a lot of things, those players are forced to move on. The team is forced to move on. Here's what I will say about Antrell Roll. I think he's an incredibly valuable player in the locker room. I still think, despite having a bit of a subpar season last year, and I know he's getting up there in age a little bit, I still think he is a very good NFL safety. Okay? We know he plays hurt and plays in pain. That's never been a question. So his durability is not an issue. Even though he has, over the course of time, you know, had to go through some injuries. He's a champion. Been to the Super Bowl twice. Once with the Cardinals and lost. Once with the Giants and won. And quite honestly, the Giants, given their state of the roster, do have a need for his safety. So, yes, I'd like to see Antrell roll back. He was the sixth highest paid safety in the league this past season at an average of 7.5 a year. And the top 20 NFL safeties make a minimum of $5 million a year. So where will he fall? Where will those negotiations take the Giants? I don't know. But I do think it is worth mentioning how Roll continues to profess his desire to be a Giant. I quote him off of Pro Football Talk in his conversation with Sirius. I want to go back to the Giants for the fact that I still feel like I still have work to do. I feel like there's more. Obviously, there's more in the tank, and there's more I need to provide as far as my services with that organization to try to help them win another title. I don't like to leave anything undone and feel like my time there is undone for whatever reason. I don't know why I feel that way, but I just feel it's just the way I feel. Some of the quotes from Antrell Roll again yesterday. He is a co-captain on this team, very much respected by the coaches and the players alike. I guess what I'm saying is I really hope it works out, because I do think he's got some gas in the tank. I also understand the finances and the Giants situation as they try to continue to tweak this roster. Undoubtedly, he's not going to be able to get the kind of numbers he got with his last contract. And I do think that there's probably a team out there. Excuse me just a second. I do think that there's probably a team out there, a contending team, that thinks they may be a player away on defense from winning a Super Bowl that will offer Roll more than what the Giants can offer him based on their salary structure. And that's where it's going to get dicey, because Roll's going to have to understand that the Giants are not going to chase him up that economic ladder. At least I don't think so. I don't think that that's the prudent thing to do on the basis of how many players they need to retool this thing and how much money they'll have under the cap. So that's where this whole thing really lies. And it's going to be very, very interesting to watch. I had one other thought that I did want to give to you guys as we get ready to take your phone calls at 201-939-4513. That would be, I heard today on the radio coming in that this is the anniversary of Buster Douglas's mammoth upset of Mike Tyson in Japan. And what they were asking on the radio was, what is the greatest upset in sports history in your mind? Is it perhaps the Buster Douglas-Mike Tyson fight? Or is it maybe Appalachian State knocking off Michigan when they were number 5 in the country in college football a few years ago? It was an interesting question. But I wasn't going to keep it open in that regard. I thought maybe the question I might ask you guys today is, what do you think the biggest upset the Giants have pulled off in your lifetime? I'm not necessarily asking for you to go back into the history books and research stuff. But what is the biggest upset you've seen the Giants pull off in your lifetime as a Giants fan? That's a pretty good question, because there are a lot of different ways to quantify that. Is it a game that they never should have won that they won? Is it a game that you thought all along? For example, when the Giants beat the undefeated Patriots in Super Bowl 42, I had every belief that the Giants were going to win that game. That was not an upset to me. So I can't consider that the biggest upset in Giants history, because I knew that they could beat the undefeated Patriots. I knew that because the last game of the regular season that year, they gave the Patriots fits. And I knew that from talking to the players. You know, after that regular season Patriots game, I knew if they got the Patriots a second time, they would win. So, to me, Super Bowl 42 was not an upset. To some people, it is a monumental upset, and I get that. So maybe that's how you want to quantify it, and that's fine with me. So maybe that's a good question for today. If you want to talk about free agency, you want to talk about Entrell Roll's loyalty with this team, if you want to talk about some of the reports out of Canada, the Calgary Herald, of course, saying that all CFL offensive lineman Brett Jones is planning to sign with the Giants as soon as perhaps today. He's a center who also apparently looks like he might be able to play some guard. That's another topic we could talk about. Or we could talk about this question about upsets. I don't know. Whatever you like to do, 201-939-4513. Paul Tatino with you until 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Nugs from Minnesota, you are first on the show. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Paulie?
Hey, good to talk to you, man.
Just going to chime in on your conversation, starter. As far as Entrell Roll is concerned, I mean, that really makes me feel good to hear that that's how he feels. I don't know how much of that is lip service as far as, you know, maybe him setting us up for, you know, setting himself up to look like the good guy when ultimately he does leave. You know what I mean?
Nugs, here's the only thing I would say, and I think I got a pretty good read on Roll from being here for a few years.
I don't think he's that type of guy.
Nor do I. I don't think he's that kind of guy at all. I think he's legit, because he usually speaks, in fact, not usually, he always speaks from the gut.
Exactly. So, you know, to hear a captain of our team and a leader on our team basically professes undying loyalty to the team. I mean, I don't see why he would want to retire anywhere else besides a Giant. I mean, he came from Arizona where, you know, they couldn't get over the hump and came here and got over the hump. And, you know, what I mean, I would like to see him as a piece that would help us get back. You know what I mean? Because I mean, we could lose him and get a free agent, or, you know, move a younger guy in there. But there's just no substitute for experience in this league. Seeing as many looks as he's seen and being as many big games as he's been in. So if he wants to come back to the team, he's gonna. I don't want us to disrespect him either and be like $500,000 a year roll, take it or leave it. But you know what I mean?
Here's what I would say, Nugs. I also believe that the intrigue of playing for Steve Spagnuolo is probably piqued Roll's interest as well.
Yep, because he knows he's going to be in a defense. He knows he's got an offense that's going to put up points, and he knows he's got a defense that's going to get to the quarterback and make the if Spags comes back and does what Spags does – he's going to have a defense that's going to make the ball come out fast. And there's nothing that safeties and cornerbacks
exactly.
love than a ball that's going to come out fast or whatever. I want to chime in on the biggest upset. The biggest upset to me was the Roger Craig fumble game. I remember being.
That's the end of the three-peat.
yeah. I remember being a young kid and just having.
God bless Dick Lynch. I'll tell you, that's a great line. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I just remember being a kid and having so many butterflies in my stomach. You know what I mean? Just like, oh man, Joe Montana and all of them, and then you thought the game was over, and then, you know, Roger Craig, and then that hit that we put on Joe Montana, Mr. Marshall. That's to me, that's the biggest upset I think that we pulled off. Maybe second was the Bills. The first time we played the Bills. And there's a play that kind of reminds me of the play that the dude from the Seahawks made when the cornerback tips the ball and then the guy caught it anyways. I remember that happened in that game against the Bills. It was James Lawson.
Perry Williams. Perry Williams was down the sideline
on the ball and Lofton caught it anyways.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, "Oh my God, I'm about to watch my team lose." But then they missed the field goal, and it was like, "Yeah, you know, that's why I'm a Giants fan."
I tell you, those are some pretty good picks. I will tell you this, Nugs, and part of the problem is. In what context do you consider an upset? I will tell you, and again, maybe it's because that I've been around the team forever, and even in those days, I had a very good appreciation because I was at practice every day for what this team was about. I thought that they'd beat the Bills in that Super Bowl. I thought that they would beat the 49ers out in Candlestick.
But you've got such an insight and such a perspective on the team that us fans don't have.
Yeah, and so
it's easier for you to be like, okay, you know, just listen to you the last few years that I've been listening to you, it's like when you say that they're going to have a problem against a team, they usually have a problem against a team. Why? Because you're at practice and you know, you're getting to see these other teams up close and you see our team every day, but us as fans, you know, we get the media hype. So it's like Joe Montana's going for the three-peat. Oh, my God, the juggernaut, you know, the West Coast offense. They've been, you know, pretty much just rolling through the whole playoffs and the whole year, you know what I mean? And that in your mind as a fan creates an upset mind state, you know what I mean?
I get you.
We really have a chance.
I'm gonna just keep you on the line for one more second here because then we have to go. But I'm going to give you mine since you got me all fired up about this topic now. I'm going to give you my greatest upset now, even though I was going to hold it for a couple of callers because you got me going. And it's because of the way I define upset. I define the upset because in my mind, I'm thinking, look, they really don't have any business winning this game, and nobody, including myself, does it. I'm going to go back to 1998 when they beat the undefeated Denver Broncos here in the Meadowlands, and Kent Graham threw that last-second touchdown pass down the right sideline and spoiled what everybody thought might be the next undefeated season, if you remember that game at all.
I remember that game, and I remember thinking that if only Kent Graham could play like that every week.
Yeah. And you and I both know that Giants team was not that good And yeah. Kent Graham was a serviceable quarterback at best, and he winds up hitting Toomer and you know, pulls that one out of the fire and ruins the Broncos' undefeated season, you know, in late December when they thought that they were oh so close to maybe pulling off a perfect season. To me, that's going to be my pick.
Yep. Out of the fire, so that's what we're calling it. Think you might have pulled that game out of some other places, but whatever.
I hear you. Nugs, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513 here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul Tatino with you up until 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Let's go back to the phone calls. Let's see who is next. It would be is it Mark? Mark is up next. Mark from New Jersey. Hello, you are on the show. Hello.
Hey, Paul. I just wanted to bring up some ideas for I know you talked about the free agent market so far. I had one friend saying that the Giants were looking at Ndamukong Suh for a while.
I don't think that's the case, to be perfectly frank with you.
I'm actually totally against it because he's just too much money, and I think you could split that money up differently.
Yeah.
The few free agents I do want, I think you have to spend money on the line this year. They haven't made an impact on the offensive line free agent-wise since Kareem McKenzie.
Right.
I really like Brian Bulaga.
Brian Bulaga from the Packers, the right tackle, to me is clearly the premier tackle in free agency. How much he's going to get, I just don't know, and that's certainly going to be something the Giants have to consider in terms of how high they want to go for that spot. But here's what I will say to you, okay? It's been made very clear by both Jerry Reese and John Mara that the Giants are not going to go after a big-ticket free agent like they did when they signed DRC last season and paid him a pretty substantial amount of money to come here. They're going to be out of that price range. They're going to be more in the next-level free agency price range. So that, to me, automatically eliminates Ndamukong Suh because you know he's going to be the premier high-priced free agent in this class.
I was saying, actually, the guy I would like is because he's going to be cheap because he was hurt last year. He's going to be a show-me contract. Is B.J. Raji is just as good as Suh. He comes from Boston College.
No, he's not just as good as Suh. I mean, come on now. And Raji's a local guy, by the way. He's a Bergen County guy, so I appreciate the affection for him. But he's had a very up-and-down last couple of years in the NFL.
Yeah, and what are they going to do with John Beeson? Because I've heard they might let him go. I heard they want to reconstruct his contract.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. I understand that at Beeson's number and coming off the injury that he's coming off of, you could understand, and I think he also can understand, why they might want to restructure some of those numbers. But at the same time, I don't understand where the rumor's coming out that just is going to cut bait with him and get rid of him. I don't see that at all. I've seen some of those reports, I guess, in the papers and online. I don't understand where they're coming from. I think the Giants, in a perfect world, still want John Beeson to be their starting middle linebacker. But I think everybody does understand, based on his injury history, that number that he's at is probably going to have to change.
Yes, and I just wanted to bring up my favorite upset game, just because I was at it, was the 2000 Giants versus Philadelphia Eagles playoff game when Jason T. Horner had his last great moment as a Giant doing the cat in the cradle interception on the ground.
One of the most athletic plays you've probably ever seen.
It was amazing to be there live. And, you know, it was my first and last playoff game since my dad
had
those tickets. So.
Well, I tell you what, if you'll give me half a second, how about when they crushed the Vikings 41-0?
Yeah, that would be my second one. Just wasn't there for that, so it's different.
I mean, you know what's funny about that? And again, if you know me a long time, if you've read and listened to my stuff over the years, you know I also picked the Giants to go to the Super Bowl that year, and I picked them to beat the Vikings. So that win wasn't a surprise to me, but the upset was the fact that they shut out one of the greatest offenses in the history of the NFL. I mean, they bludgeoned the Vikings that day. It was the most lopsided and perhaps most dominating victory in the history of Giants Stadium itself. So that could also be included in this conversation. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. JD from North Carolina, you're next on the show at 201-939-4513. Hello.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to chime in on the Antrell role and the greatest upset of all time.
Sure.
So I think beyond what Roll's got left as far as athletic ability, I think the biggest benefit he's going to bring is – the product that we're going to get as a combination of Spagnuolo and Antrel Roll.
Yeah.
When we can get a coach who is intimately involved in the chess match and making changes, you know, play to play, second to second, and you've also got a player on the field who can understand, you know, the concept, what he's trying to do, and can communicate quick enough and kind of run the defense and get those changes made. You know, everybody remembers what Antonio Pierce was able to do under Spagnuolo, and I think Antrel Roll kind of fits that mold. So to have a guy on the team like that, even though he's not a linebacker, I think it's a huge benefit
to have him work
with a D coordinator like Spagnuolo.
Beeson fits that mold, too, and that's, again, another reason why I know in a perfect world the Giants are just crossing their fingers they can get 16 games out of John, because Beeson becomes the Pierce of that defense.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, it's just, you know, even better situation if you've got two guys like that. You know, you've got one orchestrating the secondary and one guy orchestrating the front seven. And then, of course, you know, worst case scenario, if one of them goes down, you don't lose, you know, all of your on-field communication. You still got one of your on-field generals, so to speak.
How long have you been watching the Giants, JD?
Say again?
How long have you been watching the Giants?
Probably since 89.
Okay, so you could tell me who the starting safeties were for Spags in that Super Bowl, right?
The starting safeties, I believe, were Michael Johnson and was it Butler?
James Butler, Jabril Wilson, too.
You got to remember
Jabril. My point to you is, and I'm not trying to goof with you, my point to you is, you think those guys are nearly as talented as Antrel Roll? And look what Spags was able to do with that defense. With two safeties or three safeties, you include Michael Johnson in that mix. excuse me, you're talking about guys who are not of the Roll caliber.
Oh, absolutely. Not physically talented-wise, but, I mean, as far as having a guy whose communication skills are up there, I think that's why Spagnuolo brought James Butler with him to the Rams.
No question about that.
Who, you know, kind of fit that role with him going there.
And by the way, you know the funny thing about Butler, if I may add, James Butler was not physically the most gifted, okay? He was not the most gifted of safeties, but you're absolutely right in terms of his intelligence. And I'm going to tell you a little story, all right? I'm going to put this out there on the web for everybody to hear. It's a story I haven't shared with too many people. But I will tell you, I thought, okay, that James Butler in Super Bowl 42 may have had, despite the fact that Tuck and Strahan and OC did what they did, James Butler may have had the best game of all the Giants. And to fortify my belief, when the Giants got back here to New York for the parade, I pulled Spags aside. And I said, Spags, James Butler. And he looked at me with this big grin on his face. He goes, you're right. I didn't even have to say another word. And so I said, okay, I said, let me make sure we're on the same page here. James Butler was awesome in that Super Bowl. He said, you are not only right. He said, I have never in my coaching career given a safety a higher grade in a game as I just did for James Butler in that game. How about that?
Wow. That's extremely impressive.
Now, that was at the time. Spags has had, what, almost another decade of football under his belt, and so maybe someone else has done better. But at the time, Spags had said that was the best safety game that he had ever experienced as a coach. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, good story, though, right?
Absolutely. And then that kind of ties into the other half as far as talking about the biggest upsets. I guess some people that aren't Giants fans might not believe it, but I'm on board with you 100%. I think, and then I think it goes both ways. I think Super Bowl 42 was the biggest upset in professional sports history, but we all knew it was going to happen.
All right. And that's why it can't be. And, of course, Joe Namath and the Colts would have a big argument with you on that one. But the truth of the matter is, it's hard to quantify upset because there are so many ways to do it. So I'm never going to tell you you're wrong. But I can't look at that as a big upset because, again, I fully believe the Giants were going to win that game.
Right. If you were a Giants fan and you were, you know, as tapped into the to the vein as you are of the team. You know, you definitely got that feeling. Even as a fan, you know, I can attest to that. We, you know, a lot of fans had that feeling. We had way more confidence than anybody thought we should going up against an undefeated team and a quarterback that had just thrown for 50 touchdowns and one of the greatest wide receivers in history. And we were all like, yeah, but we're going
to
beat them.
You know what's funny? I remember talking to a couple of the Giants players on the side going into that game and telling them, I think you guys are going to win this game like 24-17. And you remember Plexico Burress. You remember Plexico Burress, who, of course, had actually said to the media that the Giants were going to win and predicted a score. And he got crucified for it, which I thought was crazy. Because not only was he saying what he felt and he believed, quite frankly, I agreed with him. But having said that, I had one of the defensive leaders on the team look at me and say, Paul, you're giving him 17 points? Seriously. That's how confident they were.
That's the confidence we're talking about. Yeah, exactly.
They knew they were winning the game. I mean, they knew. And it didn't take all those black suits coming off of the plane at the airport, you know, to go to the Patriots funeral to prove it to me that they were going to win that game. And they did what they had to do. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Absolutely, Paul. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. Frank from Tampa, Florida, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, Paul, great to talk with you. How are
you
doing
too.
Today?
I'm well.
Good. I wanted to chime in on a couple things. The one thing, I'd like your opinion on that Brett Jones situation, the lineman. I've seen it yesterday. In fact, if you looked him up on Wikipedia, they actually had him as a lineman for the New York Giants. Has it actually been done?
No. To my knowledge, the signing has not been officially announced. It is anticipated. Okay, it is anticipated that it will happen today, but no, to my knowledge, it has not been done as of now, 12:30 in the afternoon on Wednesday. My thoughts are very simple. I believe the Giants have four offensive linemen who are absolutely rock-solid guys on the roster. Richburg, Beattie, Pugh, and Schwartz. I think beyond that, the Giants have to look for upgrades at the other five offensive line positions on the roster. I would not at all be disappointed if they could upgrade all five of those spots, which means at least one starter and four reserves. I don't know how that's going to shake out. I don't know if any of the guys who are in that locker room now, guys like Brandon Mosley, if they've got any more upside to them. He's been around for a couple of years. He's been hurt. And I don't know if he's got any more upside at this point. So in my mind, they've got five positions on the roster, along that offensive line, that need to come up in some way, shape,
or
form.
Well, here's the thing, though, that makes it curious to me, though, because I agree with what you just said, but by saying that, by definition, we're saying that Richburg is the center. This kid has never played, I think he played one game. I do follow the Canadian game a little
bit. One game at left guard.
One game, at guard in his career, and he's undersized for a guard. He's 6'2". The other thing is, you know, one of the reasons you rarely see these kids coming down there, the ones that grew up in Canada, is because the only thing he's ever played is by the Canadian rules, high school, college, the pros.
Right.
And, you know, they've got that one-yard rule where, you know, the defensive lineman
the neutral zone
stand off. Yeah, and it takes a long time for a lot of kids to ever, if they ever get used to it, especially centers getting used to getting hit, you know, a fraction of a second after you snap the ball. But, you know, I don't see him playing guard at 6'2", and the fact that he's never played it, and he has no experience except in the one-yard rule. So, you know, he doesn't appear to me to be a guard. So if what you're saying is correct, and I agree, those are our four players, it sounds like they're getting another backup center as opposed to a guard, and it doesn't really seem to be helping.
Well, Frank, if at the very least he's an upgrade on the five reserve spots or the four reserve spots, because I said one of them is going to have to be a starter, but they have four other reserve spots that they need to upgrade. If he's an upgrade of one of those spots, it's still worth bringing him in because you didn't spend a draft pick to do it, and you probably aren't spending a lot of money to do it. So
yeah, except
it's
for the fact that he can only play center, which, you know, very well may be the case.
Yeah,
in
but
fact,
even
I read
if that's
article
true,
about him yesterday, and
Frank,
he said he doesn't want to play guard.
Worst case scenario, Richburg is the starting center. He kicks butt, and Brett Jones is the backup center. Worst case scenario, that's not so bad because they need a backup center. So there's nothing wrong with that. If that's all he turns out to be, if that turns out, well, I mean, look, I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen with J.D. Walton, but I think it's fair to say that his production this past season did not necessarily merit the contract that he got. I think everybody would pretty much agree they wanted some better play out of the center, and they'd like the center to improve, and that's probably why Richburg is going to win that starting job this season. So do you keep J.D. Walton at his number as a backup? That's kind of an iffy proposition, don't you think? So if you can get somebody younger who you think can project to that, at the very least, maybe he's the Giants' backup center. And again, I think they're going to need one.
He's got a bad history in terms of evaluating centers, both in the draft and in free agency.
Well, you're going to have to reserve judgment on that if Richburg turns out to be a 10-year pro. Because Richburg was drafted as primarily a center. Understand that. He played guard this past year because they needed him there. The idea is that Weston Richburg was drafted out of Colorado State in the second round last season to become the Giants' center of the future. That was always the plan, and I think that's going to work out just fine. Now, for Brett Jones, and I appreciate the phone call, Frank. Thank you.
Hey, Paul?
Yeah.
Can you let me chime in on the game?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Thanks. Did you want to finish your thought?
No. I would only say this. Worst case scenario, if Jones is a backup offensive lineman, I think he still provides an upgrade, so that's good. Worst case scenario. Best case scenario is maybe it turns out he can play guard. And, you know, they've seen a lot more of him than I have. I've only seen a few YouTube clips.
You haven't seen a 6'2 guard since about 1968, though.
Here's what I will tell you, all right? I don't want to belabor this point, but from the clips I saw, and again, they were only positive clips in a limited basis on YouTube, and if you go to Giants WFAN, my Twitter page, you'll see there's a link to them. He looks and reminds me an awful lot of Richie Seibert, who was also an undersized guard. Mm-hmm. In fact, quite frankly, a lot of people thought Chris Snee was an undersized guard. He turned out to be pretty good, too.
And
the comments that you will read out of Canada about Jones, and never mind the fact that he was a CFL All-Star and also CFL Rookie of the Year, you know, in his first season, the comments you read about him is that very, very smart and intelligent, and he's a scrapper. He works hard, and he's a scrapper.
The only reason he didn't go in the first round was that he was thinking of going to medical school.
So you know what? I'm hearing and seeing a lot of characteristics that kind of put him in that Snee and Seibert mold. I'd have no problem if he turns out to be Richie Seibert the second, and I don't think you would either.
No, and when I heard about his mental acuity, you know, I kind of liked the idea because it went along with, you know, the things like last year. You look at the kids that they drafted, you know, most of them were captains. Most of them were really bright kids, you know, and it really seemed to help out. They all, you know, we got a lot of production. And I think a lot of times the lack of production that first or second year is as much mental as physical, and we got a lot of production. So, yeah, that bodes well. But as far as the game's concerned, you know, I'm going to give you this as a fan's perspective as opposed to, you know, someone with your inside knowledge and your ability to, you know, break things down. But just as a fan, I will never forget, and I've been watching the Giants for years and years, probably as long as you have, Paulie, but the Minnesota game, you know, in, was it 99 or 2000? The
2000 against, season when they hammered the Vikings 41-0.
I will never forget that because I've never experienced that in a Giant outside of a Giant game. People were walking around almost in a trance, as if there's no way that we can possibly stop, you know, Carter and Moss. And it was like they're waiting for an execution. People were just so kind of down and like, do you think we can keep it close? I'd never seen anything like it. That whole vibe. And then once the game started, and as you remember, you know, we hadn't even gotten the ball on offense, and we were up 14-0, and it became a coronation. I mean, it was, you know, there wasn't even
it was awesome.
Like a football game on. It was a party for 3 hours.
It was.
I'll never forget my buddy coming up and putting hats on our heads that said NFC champs at the end of the third quarter. I thought he had made them up himself. But the vibe was unbelievable,
Frank,
how it changed. But then what was amazing, and I think why that game doesn't get as much due as what unfortunately happened, you know, 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
And because, you know, we were playing a much better team that, you know, in the Ravens, and yet from a fan's perspective, next thing you know, my house was deluged by kids, you know, my buddies coming down to watch the Super Bowl, right? Well, now we're playing a much better team, and yet everyone's got this false enthusiasm, like, we're going to kick their butts, and I'm like, I don't know about this, you know.
Appreciate it, Frank. You know, I want to get to the other calls, but I appreciate it, and that's not a bad pick. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Just some closing comments off of Frank's call. First of all, again, to me, the scope and the wide range of production that the Giants might expect out of Brett Jones if he does sign, again, the CFL offensive lineman from the Calgary Stampeders, I think it's very much unknown right now. There's a best-case scenario. There's a worst-case scenario. But, again, it seems to me that the worst-case scenario, if he should sign with the Giants today, is that he's an upgrade on the back end of the depth chart along the offensive line. And if you know anything about me and my old school beliefs, it's that the offensive line is critical. So I'm all for it. As far as the Vikings game, again, it's a story that was published at the time, but I don't think many people remember it. When the Giants beat the Vikings and hammered them in the greatest lopsided dominating victory in Giants Stadium history in that playoff game at the end of the 2000 season, you recall, the media goes into the press room after the game is over to get the interviews of the guys up at the podium, and Jesse Armstead reaches down under the podium and pulls out a piece of paper. Jesse's still an assistant coach with the Giants, as you know, an advisor and so forth. Pulls out a piece of paper from under the podium, takes it out, and shows us he had predicted before the game the Giants would shut out the ever-powerful, historic Minnesota Vikings offense. And had taken that paper, folded it up, and thrown it underneath the podium in anticipation that he would be standing there as not only a winner, but as someone who helped shut out that offense. And wouldn't you know it, they did it. Again, I wasn't surprised that they won. I was surprised that they shut him out, though. So that can't qualify as the greatest upset to me because I did pick the Giants to win that game. Shakes from Baltimore, you're next on the Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Paulie?
How you doing?
Great stories by everybody on the the biggest upset. You took mine, though, both of mine, really. My number one was the undefeated Broncos.
Because
I remember at the time we were so sorry. And I remember I used to just be, you know, I couldn't wait to watch football. But at the same time, I was still in nausea because I started watching in 1990, so I started watching in the Super Bowl, so it was the ultimate high. Then I got ultimate lows ever since when I had to deal with Dave Browns and Kent Grahams and all these guys. So when we beat them undefeated Broncos, I was so shocked, and
sure.
I did not believe that was going to happen. I thought they was going to steamroll us. But it was a great one. And the second one was, again, against the Broncos with Eli Manning's coming party. He came along. He finally came. And he threw that touchdown to Amani Toomer. The feeling that I had, man, it's classic, and I will always remember it.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, the Eli Manning against Denver. I don't know that too many people would say that, but you're right in terms of bringing back that memory. Certainly an incredible victory and a sign of many things to come for Eli. The 98 team, the thing about that, you know, you have to remember is that was much like the year a couple of seasons ago where the Giants started off very poorly in the first half of the season, and they had actually wound up benching Danny Cannell, if you remember. Because in 97, they had won the NFC East. And then in 98, Cannell come back as the second-year starting quarterback. And all of a sudden, he was running into a lot of problems. You remember Gary Brown was the Giants' lead rusher that year. Wound up with 1,000 yards the last day of the season when he ran well in Philadelphia against the Eagles. But that was not a very good team. and Cannell gets benched midway through the season. Kent Graham comes in, and they, I think they won like the last four games to finish out the season and wound up finishing 500. But it was with 3 weeks left in the year that they upset Denver. They were, Giants wound up, at that time, I believe that made them 6-8 at the time. They were, they had to wind up winning like four in a row at the end of the year just to get to 500. So they were just, it was they were struggling along. So that was a very, very big victory for the team. That's why for me it's got to be number one.
Yeah, me too. Great minds think alike. Here's the thing. here's the thing I wanted to talk to you about. Now, I'm not sure if you're on your draft hat yet. I don't know if you got that on yet.
I'm but, still trying to wade through free agency a little bit more than the draft right now, but go ahead.
Okay. But I wanted to, if you're not looking, I know you got a favorite position. I know you like the offensive line, but I know you also like tight ends, too, that can block. So I wanted I'm pretty sure you know this guy because he made an impact of on the, in the Senior Bowl. But Boyle from Delaware, I like that kid, man. When you talk about somebody that can block and run up the seams, I like him.
I have heard many things about him. I'm not ducking your question. I haven't watched enough tape, but I have heard of him. But here's the thing I want to say, Shakes, about this. The Combine's coming up next week. I know John Schmelk is heading down there. Anita Marks is also going to be there giving us some coverage as well. And obviously NFL Network is going to be on with hours and hours and hours of draft stuff. For me, and I know John's been talking a lot of draft on this show lately because I know he's preparing for the Combine, I'm not so much diving into the draft yet. I've got some things to kind of sort through. But I do appreciate your thoughts about the Delaware kid.
No problem. I just wanted you to check him out. And also a kid in Oklahoma, Blake Bell. He can be like a – they said late rounds, but like he might be a free agent. So he's a good tight end too. So check those two dudes out, man. And I appreciate you taking my call, Party.
All right, Shakes. You be well. See, part of the situation you got to remember, and by the way, I'm looking at this, the numbers on Boyle. Nick Boyle from Delaware is the tight end he's talking about. 6'5", 267, okay? Certainly the kind of size that I want out of a blocking tight end for sure. The Oklahoma guy, Blake Bell, goes 6'6", 263. So, Shakes, we're on the same page there. I am so happy that you would come to me with a phone call and not ask about a pass-catching tight end like Ebron last year. My goodness, how many times did I have to hear about him? I told you folks that was not going to be a good fit for the Giants, and, you know, never mind. I don't want to get back. I never want to hear his name again. In any event, bottom line is this. The Giants need a blocking tight end. You and I both know that. We've been talking about it for a while now, so I appreciate the fact that you're coming to the table at least those kinds of guys in the conversation. Because I'm not talking about pass-catching tight ends. I just have no tolerance for it. Giants have one already in Larry Donnell, who has been a productive pass-catching tight end. But that's not what they need, okay? That's not what they need. So, you know, you want to talk to me about Dan Campbell types, Howard Cross types? I'm fine with that. Okay? But I'm not talking about pass-catching tight ends, period. All right. Next phone call at 201-939-4513. Brian from St. Louis. Hey, I saw the Arch when we were out there this past season. How you doing, Brian?
Good. I was at the game. So, yeah, it was a great game.
That was a heck of a game, I'll tell you.
First of all, I want to say my thoughts and prayers go out to the Jerry Tarkanian family. I just saw he passed away. So.
Oh, I did not catch that news this morning. Yeah, certainly our condolences for sure. The entire sports world certainly knows all about the colorful Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV men's basketball for so many years.
Yeah, Larry Johnson was my favorite player. So
Grandmama.
College. Oh, yeah, especially when he played with the Knicks.
I got you.
First off, I want to talk about how we look on our offense compared to going into the draft. I think we're looking pretty good first two rounds of not even taking anybody offense, seeing that they signed this Jones guy. I know there's hype on him and people are up and down on him.
Well, he's not signed yet. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, okay, not signed yet. But
it's anticipated by a lot of folks, but I don't believe it's been done yet.
But, I mean, like you said, you know, worst-case scenario, he could be a great backup. I mean, his intelligence you know, and his urge. He's been talking about this as his dream, is going to the NFL, not playing Canadian League, but coming here. And if he's got the urge and the drive and the intelligence,
oh, yeah,
knows the difference, I think he could become a great backup, if not maybe a starter, and, you know, Richburg, you know, stay at guard.
Put it this way, so, from everything you've read, the comments that he has given to the Canadian papers over the course of the last few days, you don't think he's coming here to fail. That's for sure.
No. And so that leaves it open with, you know, drafting, you know, hopefully some defense in the first round. You know, with the defense, yeah, we need linebackers and defensive tackles, and there's going to be some there, probably at the number nine position. I like the two guys from Washington, the defensive tackle and the linebacker there, if there. But, I mean, knowing the Giants, it might go offensive line, or, you know, best-case scenario, we get a great defensive tackle and stop that run that we need to do.
You know, the interesting part about this is that, you know, they need multiple guys along the offensive line. They can't just stop with signing a CFL guy and think that that's going to be enough. They've got to do more. Now, Brandon Scherff of Iowa, I have seen so many projections on him. He could go as high as 5. He could go as low as 15. Now, we know the Giants are picking 9. The wide range of where he is expected to land really makes things hard for me, because I think he clearly is the best suited for what the Giants need at offensive tackle if you're going to take him and move Pugh inside.
I agree.
Now, here's the problem. You look at Collins and you look at Pete, the other two highly rated offensive tackles who could be first-round picks. Chances are they're going to go in the 10 to 15, 16 range, or maybe even a little lower than that. A lot of people don't like them as much as run blockers. They think they're better pass blockers. Well, that doesn't fit what the Giants want. You know, the Giants need a stud guy. If they're going to make the move at tackle to move Pugh inside, it's got to be a road grader, a Kareem McKenzie type. And so that makes it kind of difficult, because you just don't know if Scherff is going to be there. If he's not going to be there, and again, you're not going to know this because free agency starts before the draft, well, now you got to make some decisions. You know, do you go and throw money at a guy like Franklin? Do you throw money at a guy like Bulaga? And you say, look, we're going to take care of this situation now, okay? And
but is a problem at right tackle that big? I mean, yeah, you know, Pugh had a down year.
Well,
you know,
and that's the other thing. And
guard was changing. I mean,
and that's the other thing, though, Brian. How about we just keep Pugh at right tackle? How about that?
I agree.
We could do that,
I
too.
We should keep Pugh at right tackle, and then when Schwartz comes back, if he's healthy, I think Pugh's going to be better, because he's going to have a good, solid, you know, guard next to him. You know, not a backup, and not somebody that, you know, couldn't get the job done, or was a rookie or something that he didn't have. If he's going to have somebody there, that Schwartz can play that year. If he comes back healthy, and Pugh, I think we're going to have a great running.
Yeah, you know what? Again, and this is why it's so liquid. I think there are so many moving parts to this thing. Maybe Pugh stays at right tackle. Maybe even Schwartz winds up playing right tackle, and maybe Pugh goes to right guard. That could happen, too. I'm not ruling anything out right now. Here's what I will tell you, though, Brian. The best 5 got to be on the field.
I agree.
That's the bottom line. And you know Tom Coughlin says that all the time. The best 5 have to be out on the field, and you got to mix and match as best as you possibly can. And that's why I have to tell you, when people say to me, oh, you know, Beattie shouldn't be playing left tackle, or, you know, Pugh can't move inside to play guard, I say that's a bunch of balderdash. You know what? Right. You got to get your best 5 out there. Wherever they're going to play, you got to get them out there. Thanks for the call, Brian. I appreciate it.
No problem. You have a great day.
All right, you too. 201-939-4513. Paul Dottino with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're taking you to the top of the hour, so we've got some time for more phone calls. Actually, what I didn't do yet, didn't go to the Twitter, and I know that you guys probably have a bunch of Twitter comments out there, and I do want to get back to the calls, but let's see quickly here. Sonny Boy says the 18-1 Patriots upset was the biggest upset for him. He throws that out. We have, let's see. Oh, PZO? Yeah, PZO says no problem with role returning, but he has to be coming on our terms. He says he was a liability last year. I don't necessarily agree with that, but he certainly was down compared to the two Pro Bowl seasons prior. Let's see here. Do we have anything else? Giants. I was looking at my Twitter page. People hit me up at Giants WFAN. So we go back to Giants chat. Mr. Perfect 170 wants to know if the Colts safety will be worth a look at the G-Man Landry. I'm not sure of his contract status right now. And again, you gotta be very careful when you're talking about veteran free agents, because you're running into some bucks too. But I'll take a look at his contract status when we get a moment. Let's see here. Cincinnatus says, why isn't Adrian Robinson a blocking tight end? Well, he hasn't shown a proficiency to do that to this point. David Henderson says, best memory of Vikings game was when Wellington Mara chastised the media during the trophy presentation, talking about that muddy field. That's very true. I remember it well. The trays. Remember the grass trays? Oh, those things were a mess. Ben Gruen says, I think the Giants at Green Bay 2007 season, worth mentioning. Giants actually dominated the game, but not the score. Tough conditions. Yeah, but then again, and I go back to you, I thought going into the playoffs that year, the Giants' toughest game was going to be in Dallas. I know the Dallas game did not go to overtime. The Green Bay game did. They destroyed the Packers that day. That was a one-sided affair. Tynes had missed a couple of field goals. Bradshaw had a touchdown that was pulled back on a phantom holding penalty against the Giants' offensive line. They dominated the Packers that day. That never should have come down to Corey Webster's overtime interception on Brett Favre. So, you know, to me, that was not an upset at all. Avery says, Richburg was the best center in his draft. I'm hopeful and believe he will be a great center. I think the Giants agree with you. Thanks very much. Let's see here. Illuise says, Giants spent a lot of money, second most on free agency last year behind the Broncos, and it backfired. I don't necessarily know about that. Got to see. You know, you can never say something like that right after 1 year. I mean, I think Dominic Rogers-Cromartie was still a good sign for this team, and he was the big ticket item of the Giants free agent take last season. Dwayne Kennedy says, Buster Douglas, or he's just going overall. Buster Douglas, 2004 Red Sox over the Yanks, Giants over the Bills in Super Bowl 25. His biggest sports upsets. So he expanded the palette just a little bit. And let's see here. Angelo Pasalacqua says, if we re-sign Roll, is Landon Collins a good pick? I believe we get a pass rusher, but wouldn't mind Collins. Well, again, you know, my feeling has always been not to go safety in the first round, and yet the Giants have done that over the course of time with Sean Williams and with Kenny Phillips. Both guys, similar knee injuries that wound up destroying their careers, and they never amounted to what they were supposed to be. My feeling is generally you don't go for a safety in the first round. But again, that's just an old school philosophy, and there are always exceptions to the rule. All right, that's enough of the internet. Let's go back to the phone calls. AJ, is it from South Carolina? You're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
Good afternoon, Paul. I want to answer well.
Sure.
I want him to sign with the Giants and retire as a Giant.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, he's been to two Pro Bowls and won a Super Bowl with this team. I know they value him very highly. But again, now it's going to come down to numbers. And what does Roll think he needs to have to stay here? I don't think there's any doubt the Giants would like to have him back, you know. But, right. But it comes down to the numbers. And safeties are getting paid a lot of money these days. As I told you, the 20th safety in the NFL is getting paid $5 million a year. The position has become a richer position over the last several years.
And my second question is about the draft. I know most mock drafts got a short go to the Giants, and one of them, Mike Washington, might take him. I like Sherrod. I want him to fall the night with the Giants, offensive line with the first pick.
That would be really cool if he does. He is, I think, the consensus best offensive lineman in this draft out of Iowa. Again, I've seen projections. He could go as high as 5. He could go as low as 15. And the Giants happen to be right smack in the middle there at number 9. So I think that would be a very interesting call if Scherf is there at 9. I certainly would have no problem with them taking him. Appreciate the call.
I like to take him with the first pick. If not, I like the other tackle, Collins out of LSU.
You like Collins out of LSU at 9, huh? That seems to be a little high by most counts. I mean, look, there's always a chance the Giants drop back 4 or 5 spots, too. I mean, it's not out of the question that you make a deal. Hey, appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much. 201-939-4513 here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only a couple of minutes left. Our phone lines are open. If you always wanted to get in, I'm going to tell you right now, dial us up. I will get you in one more caller on the show at 201-939-4513. Otherwise, final thoughts for me about the upset call. And again, you know, it's very funny because over the years, and Jim Fassel was right when he said after that Vikings upset in the 2000 playoffs, you can't have a better win in your building than the conference championship win because, as we all know, no team has ever hosted a Super Bowl. It's just the way the mathematics have happened now. And in almost 50 years of Super Bowls, we've never seen a team wind up hosting it. We've almost seen it a couple times, but it never actually happened. So, you know, I remember Coach Fassel was saying it after they destroyed the Vikings. This is the greatest win and the greatest atmosphere and the greatest party and the greatest celebration because it's your fans in your house. And your fans in your house can't be transported to the Super Bowl. And in that case, you know, he was right. I mean, it really was a party throughout the entire second half and certainly the fourth quarter as the Giants ran roughshod and sent the Minnesota Vikings packing in that game. And again, one of the most dominating performances you'd ever see in the NFL postseason history. And it was pretty wild. And in some regard, he was right. Because how many of those fans, how many of those season ticket holders who go to the Giants games each and every week were there in that building that day to enjoy that? And for whatever reason, have never been able to make the trip or travel to a Super Bowl. I mean, when you think about that, in person, when you win a conference championship game, whether or not the Giants beat the Redskins at home in the 86 season or the 2000 season when they destroyed the Vikings. I mean, when you win a conference championship game at home, yeah, that's pretty special. There's certainly some elements of that that make it probably the best it can get for your season ticket holders because a lot of them are not going to be able to make the trip. So, in any case, I do share that with you because I remember when Jim Fassel said that after that season, and he was right. He was right. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. All right, well, guess what? We didn't get another phone call in the last 2 minutes of the program. So we will kick it out here. Once again, Big Blue Kickoff Live is here Monday to Friday from noon to 1 Eastern Time each and every weekday to take your phone calls and your Twitter comments and questions about the New York Football Giants. Jot down the number 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. I'm Paul Dottino. We'll see you again next time.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.